everyone, to the very first episode of the She's Electric podcast presented by Hyundai. This is an incredible series where we get to deep dive into the people you want to know about. We have huge guests coming on the show and we're starting off with an absolute bang, Molly Picklem. So if you're out there, you want to know more about her story, more about where she came from, what her childhood was like, and what it's really like on tour, tune into this episode because it's going to be absolutely incredible. All right, Molly, welcome in to the She's Electric podcast presented by Hyundai. You are our first guest. You got to be feeling pretty chuffed. Hey,
what an honor.
First guest.
What an honor to be the first guest.
I thought you'd like that one.
Yes.
Yeah, I know. And also, I think perfect first guest too.
I think so. Hey? It seems fitting. I feel like you being the host, myself, a real fan of driving the Hyundai vehicles. I don't know. I mean, it's going to be down for a good chat. You and I, it's
absolutely
fireworks.
Now, Molly, based on our good chats that we always have, for those who don't know, Molly and I grew up together. Based on our relationship, I know that you and I can yap, right? We can waffle on about anything and everything for hours, but when I was planning out the show, I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, this is going to be so easy. It's just Molly and I. But then I was like, no one knows Molly. Like, I know Molly. So to kick us off, I really wanted to ask you a few more personal questions because I want all of our listeners to feel like they know Molly the way I know you. So can I ask you a couple non-surfing questions? Get you all excited for the show.
Let's go. This is why you're perfect for this, JJ.
Yeah. No, we need to relax into it, get a couple of, I don't know, quirky questions going. They are tricky questions, so you can think about them.
Okay,
but
okay.
First one, if you were told you could only listen to 3 songs on repeat for the rest of your life, what would they be?
All right. You know what I'm trying to do, actually? You know when we drove in the car to all the QSs and we'd have road playlists just banging, screaming. I'm trying to think of one of them. But I think relevant to what's happening in my playlist at the moment, I have to say Adele. I just belt Adele. So I'm going to say let's just go Someone Like You by Adele. Okay.
Wow. That's one.
That's one. All right.
Yep.
And then the next one, I'm going to go for Bad Girl Riri. And I might do Rehab, which is a random song.
Oh my gosh. Really?
Or Disturbia or something. Like any Riri. I pick a song and I'll go for that. And then just like a coastal cruisy vibe. Of some sort.
Okay.
Who do I want for this? Morgan Wallen would seem so cliche, but I'm just going to go for a Morgan Wallen, maybe the Cowgirl, whatever that song is.
I love it. They're 3 really different songs, but I feel like that probably sums you up.
Yes, like, exactly.
They're like exactly you, they're like point. Your different moods. You go through those different stages, so it kind of sets you up for your different moods that you're rolled through. The next question I have for you, Molly, your death row meal, the last meal you can ever eat. I'm talking entree, main, dessert. What are we eating? What's at the dinner table?
Okay, you got listeners. You're going to find a real common theme with me straight away, which only Jesse could actually identify that from the start, which congratulations. Yep. So these
Thank
questions
you.
Is actually really funny. So let me get into it. Oh, shit. Oh, my God. One moment.
Bear with us for a second, everyone.
Yeah, sorry, guys. This is the classic. Welcome to my show. Bing! Oh, shit. Sorry, guys. My bad.
It's okay. No, you're fine. Let's go. What are we eating?
No. Yeah, sorry. Okay, so my last, like I said, these questions are really going to bring in who I am because we've seen the theme of my music. Now my food. All right. Entree, you want entree, main, dessert.
Yes.
I think entree, I love a little arancini ball.
Oh, I knew it. I actually knew that.
Because the reason I say this is because – okay, I don't need to explain everything because this is going to go forever. But when you get it on arancini's, just they're too good not to have, and they're too small for a main. Perfect entree.
Yeah, agreed.
And then my main, either like a salad and steak or salmon or something.
Okay.
But I want like a pretty exquisite salad. Like I want a few bit of variety in there. I don't want like just lettuce and a carrot in there. I want like good variety. I want a rainbow.
No, we want gourmet. We're not mucking around. This is our last meal.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel it steak medium with the best salad I've ever eaten. That's actually prime. And sweet potato fries would be sick.
On the side.
Yeah. Okay.
And then dessert.
Yeah. All right. I'll take this serious. Anyone who knows me, I'm a foodie. Okay. Okay, dessert. I love a good traditional custard and apple pie, like apple pie and then custard with a scoop of ice cream.
Really?
It's like kind of, well, just because it's like, again, three desserts in one. It's epic.
I have never seen you eat one of those in my life.
And apple, but when we get dessert, it's like ice cream or something.
Yeah, true.
Like I'm thinking, or I love a sticky date pudding. That's also yum.
Same. That is mine.
So there you have it. As complicated as it can possibly get, but that's.
I love it. I've got three more little rapid fire questions for you just so that the audience can still feel like, okay. One of them is, what's your guilty pleasure? What's something you know you shouldn't do, but you do it anyway? And if you want an example, I can give you mine.
Yeah, please.
Every time I get on a plane, it doesn't matter. It could be 6 a.m. I'll buy myself a little cookies and cream Hershey's bar and I eat it every time before I get on a plane. And I'm about to catch a lot of planes, could come home obese. Could tune into the next episode. I'm going to be fat. So just watch this space, everyone. Watch this space.
The camera will slowly move further away from background. So you
just get bigger and bigger. Yeah.
I'm not worried for you at all, Jessie. I know you're regimented. You're disciplined. Okay. Guilty pleasure. Look, I'm still young. We're young. I go through the phase again when I'm traveling and I have a lot of time. All the time that I actually don't have. Scrolling for sure, I'm going to be honest.
Yeah.
I am very disciplined with it at times, but scrolling, it annoys me that that's a guilty pleasure, but I love it. I don't scroll through Instagram because I try and get away from surfing, but like TikTok or YouTube and stuff like that where it's just like I watch cooking stuff or comedy stuff, like whatever, just random brain numbing.
I love it. Who doesn't love a scroll though? Like you're only human.
Right. I agree. But I think another one is definitely like I just eat if I'm bored. So that's like a guilty pleasure of mine.
Bored eating.
There you go.
I love it. Last two questions. What gets you out of bed in the morning? What gets you excited? What gets you up?
Okay. I mean, food, breakfast, that's pretty good. But I'll go more philosophical. I'll go more on a deeper.
No, we can stick with food. Food's great. We don't have to go deeper. That's the honest answer. You said food.
I mean, but in general, what gets me out of bed every day?
If I'm being honest, food gets me out of bed every day too. Am I being honest?
Knowing breakfast is there gets me actually up. But I think to get up and get into it, is a different story. And I think that is just like my curiosity really makes me chase and on this pursuit of greatness. I don't know. Like obviously I've connected with surfing and the ocean and this whole thing. And that is what gets me out of bed to just suck the marrow out of that and maximize that.
I love it. Well, you know what? I reckon the audience knows you. I reckon we're all friends at this point in time. Let's roll straight in. Yeah, we're all mates. Let's not be silly. So what we're going to do, Molly, is I want us to go on a journey, you know? I want us to just go on this path together. So we're going to go way back to the start. We're going pre-surfing Molly Picklum. Tell me about your childhood. Tell me about school. Were you a nerd? Were you popular? How was school? How was your childhood? Give us the deets.
All right. Me as a child, I think I was intense, very vibrant, very just like up and at it in any sense. School I loved because it was an endless pool of people to talk to and play with and whatnot. I struggled a little bit at school though because I was a little different. I wasn't the cookie cutter kid. I was a little bit like, I don't know, sporty. And then I remember when the boy situation kind of started, like I was just like away and never could really make connections. And I lost touch with my school life and like traveling on the road. So it was hard sometimes school, but in general, from an early age, I was just like, you don't think as a kid, you just go for it. And I just remember I was playing touch football or footy on the oval and handball, all of that through school. And outside, like I was digging sandcastles on the beach, hanging out with friends, played every sport under the sun. Like honestly, as a kid, every day I was so busy with sport, swimming, soccer, surfing, touch, nippers, you name it, I was kind of doing it.
Every great female surfer started somewhere. It's getting exposure, that's the hard part.
Hyundai She's Electric is back
for season 3.
And this is your chance to make Team Electric this year.
Team Electric will get access to expert coaching and national exposure.
The top surfer with a 12-month Hyundai ambassadorship.
A 12-month Hyundai vehicle loan.
Not to mention a VIP experience with me at the Hyundai ABB Grand Final 2025. Enter now via the She's Electric website. Will you be discovered next?
When our paths crossed and we first became friends, you were still playing touch football pretty high up, and I actually knew your touch football coach, and you played for the Renegades, and I remember they were absolutely gutted that you decided to choose surfing over touch football. Talk me through your relationship with other sports prior to surfing. Like, obviously, you and touch, like, you went pretty deep with touch for a while there.
For sure.
What was that experience like for you?
For sure. I think I played for the Manly Seagulls, which is high, like, I think it's neighbours with the Renegades.
Oh, I thought it was the Renegades you played for.
I am Manly Seagulls, and I have to clear it up because...
I am so sorry.
No stress at all, but... The Manly Seagulls is where I ended, and I'm grateful that I got there and was able to play. But, I mean, like you saw, touch football was everything to me. I surfed on the weekends and I touched 3 days a week, 4 days a week. So it was my priority. And I remember seeing you, and I was doing the surf comps and touch tournaments, and I was trying to juggle them. And I guess, like, I mean, I love touch and I really miss it because it's so different. It's like the team environment, the really community vibe. I was like taken care of so well by my touch family, the Nathans, and their whole family. It was just like, I really felt like home for me as a kid. It was a really safe space. And then surfing and touch football was like clashing. And I remember my mom looked at me and was like, "Hey, you've got this on the weekend. You got to pick one." And then I was like, this is my worst nightmare. I got to pick one. Like, you talk about growing up, and I thought, shit, I'm getting old. Like, I'm growing up. Like, I've got to do one thing. I can't do 10.
Big decision to make right now.
And I remember real clearly for me, it was a fork in the road. And I guess it was my first time really thinking about surfing, because for me, surfing was just a weekend thing. I did not watch competitions. I didn't know the sport of competitive surfing. I just knew it was this thing that people did at the beach, and it was really cool. But in general, yeah, I just remember mum telling me, and I thought, oh, thinking about it, oh, okay, touch football. Like, I've done that for a bit. And mum was like, surfing, like, you haven't really done that a whole lot. And it was like the fun thing. It was the hobby, the cool thing to do on the weekend. And touch was more of, not the grindy thing, because I really love doing it, but it was more like surfing's so new for me at that time, and where could I take that? What could I do? And then I just remember mum was like, "Oren, like, seems, I don't know where touch leads, but surfing, you could maybe do that for life if you wanted, maybe." And I just remember going, okay, like, all right, I want to do surfing. Surfing, I haven't felt like I hadn't done – tried really. I hadn't put my best foot forward in it, and I felt like touch football, I'd really done that for a few years, quite a few years, and I was like, I think I'm done. So I went for the new approach, the change, and thank whatever that I chose surfing. Although I really do miss touch football, and I wish my body could maintain that fitness so I could just jump on the touch footy field and get a couple drives up the field and a couple switches, a couple dummies, you know.
I've seen you, Molly. You're pretty fit. I reckon you could do it. But
those knees.
You know, you went. I feel like you, from day dot, you were always kind of set out that you wanted to be an athlete. You obviously have a lot of energy. And I think it doesn't take a moron to see that you're an energetic person, you're always upbeat, but there actually is creativity in your family as well. Your brother is an extremely talented artist. Mm-hmm. Was there ever going to be a point in time that it was going to be Molly Picklum the artist, Molly Picklum the ballerina? Like, was there any other, like, every other crossroads you came up to, or were you always like, oh, maybe, you know, my brother's good at painting, I'll pick up the paintbrush? You know, was there any ever of that?
Yeah, I mean, only you could ask me that question. And I think it's such a good question because it's so funny when you grow up and you see like two siblings grow up and one, like it's chalk and cheese. It's just so different. But I think growing up, I was just so sport heavy. I'm not sure why I was. I think some things just come naturally and I was just drawn to activities and the fun and the community spirit around sports. And I guess, potentially because my brother kind of took up that creative box and I was like, that's his deal and I'm not him. I'm like, I'm cool and I do sports. You know, you're kind of competitive with your brother and that's the way I was competitive with him. Like, I do these cool sport things and you draw these things that I could never draw and paint. And so it was never, for me, it was never like, oh, I might start, just get out the pencils and start drawing and create it. Like, the creative thing is, my dad and my mom are really good artists as well. Like, they actually chose those subjects through school and really enjoyed that. And my brother got that end. But I don't know, something just, obviously my mom put me in sport and was like, I guess you just want to keep playing sport, so go for it.
Yeah, I feel like, and now too, you're probably creative in your own way, you know, the way you surf, the way you kind of hold yourself as well. But talking about surfing, let's get into that kind of start. Paint me the picture. Take me to the day that you stood up on a surfboard for the first time. I want to be there. What did it feel like?
I mean, like we just discovered, I'm not good at painting, so bear with me here.
Give me a moment.
No, the first day I stood up on a surfboard, look, I'm going to be honest, I don't remember and I don't have the most detailed story. But I've got something for you. I have a few key moments in my surfing career really early on that I do remember. And I think some of those, one is my dad, we used to go down to the beach and surf on a weekend. And I remember my brother, myself and my dad would go down to the beach and we'd have bodyboards and surfboards and they would sit on the beach. And my dad could only take one of us out at a time because like he didn't want one of us to drown. So I remember he would get his flippers on and like take out my brother or me. And I don't know if we ever fought about going out first, but I remember most of the time, I'm pretty sure I was scared. So I was kind of like, yeah, you go. And if you die, then I won't go. and then I just remember digging sandcastles and I'd be like, wouldn't even watch the surf. I'd just entertain myself on the beach. And then dad would come in and be like, it's your turn. And I'm like, okay, like, cool. We're taking out the bodyboard. And I think that was, I guess, a pretty like, I have a good memory of that. And that's early on, I remember. Then another one.
Do you know, like, what age that would have been? Like, how old are we talking?
I think that's, like, 7.
Oh, so young.
Yeah, for sure. I reckon that's, yeah, I would say that's, like, 7 to 10. And then I think an earlier one is my mum's partner at the time ran a surf school. And we used to, again, so my parents, like, I would go to the beach when I was at both sides and my mum, we'd go to the beach and we'd literally just be around the surf school the whole weekend. So it was like, you can build sandcastles all day, get sunburnt, or you can grab one of the foamies out of the truck and take it out and hang around a bunch of learners. And I guess I just did that. Like, I loved it. And honestly, the funniest thing is now that I look back at it, I was 12 at this stage and pushing like 50, 60-year-olds into waves or like 20-year-olds and teach them how to surf because I'd watched him do it and teach the lessons and I knew exactly what he'd say and what it looked like. And now looking back, I'm thinking, how do people even listen to me? And I was actually pushing people into waves. So that's kind of an early – there, I feel like some good memories early.
I reckon that was a little tactical play by your mum, just being like, she's got energy to burn, teach you how to push people in ways.
Fully, hey.
And, you know, I feel like you kind of got the bug at maybe around the 12 age, I want to say. I feel like you got that surfing bug. Mm. How many years was it until, like, from, you know, when you were consistently surfing to when you started competing? Like, how long in between was that?
Yeah, I guess I was around the beach from 3-4 years old. So I think from then, I'll say from 5, I was probably doing stuff on a surfboard. And then I didn't start doing turns until I was 11. Like, I got my first fiberglass surfboard when I was 11, and then I entered my first competition when I was 14. So I guess from the time I start to the time I start competing, it's anywhere from, I don't know, whatever you class surfing, but 5 to 10 years.
Yeah. So we want to say that, like, 14 is kind of where your competitive career started.
Yeah. I have a few, there's a few things around this age that were real key to surfing. I guess the starting of it was our pro junior series. I remember the first competition I entered. The reason I entered it was at Avoca, and I'm actually North Shirley Board Riders. I did North Shirley Board Riders was the first. I was surfing with friends and they said, oh, come hang out on the weekend and surf. Like, we surf on all day Saturday. And I was like, oh, that's fun. Like, okay. And then compete and won a couple heats maybe there and thought, oh, this is fun. Like, I should try the bigger comp that they're doing because I feel like I'm close to their level. And then I remember going into the pro junior and I remember so clearly thinking, my Instagram clips are better than that. Like, I've seen myself surf this and that. And I entered the competition and I remember – like losing first heat at Avoca and throwing the biggest tantrum, like devastated, thought my life was over and this and that because like life didn't match the expectation I had. And then my mum just like grabbed me and said, if you ever do that again or act like that again, I will not take you to a surf comp again. And I was just like, whoop. I was like,
sorry, mum,
here I come, off I go.
I feel like I used to do that too growing up. If I, like, I'd see who was in my heat in like the Oki Grum comp, and I'd be like, then I'd go stalk their Instagram, watch their surf clips. Oh. Like, oh yeah, I surf better than them. It was such a, like,
that is literally
such a thing to do.
It was. And that's like our generation with the whole social media. Like, it's crazy. Yeah. It's a whole different level of pressure and expectation. It's so wild. And it started young. Like, we were doing that. And then we kind of play games of like, who does that? Who doesn't? Like, no, I didn't know who's in my draw, this and that.
Yeah. Yes, literally, literally. But now we're going on to the Grump Comp topic. I want to paint you a little picture of when our friendship started. Okay. Yes. So we met in January 2017. Okay. So a while ago now. And then on the 18th of July, 2017, you won your first ever New South Wales Junior State titles. There is a photo of Zoe Eifeld and I carrying you up the beach down there. That was the first comp I feel like we really like bonded at. That was the start. But that wasn't just like the start of our friendship. I felt like that was kind of the turning point for your competitive career. Like, I feel like I blinked and you were on tour. Like, that's kind of how it felt. And you went from, you won the Rip Curl National Final, I think in 2019, and then you won your first Challenger Series 3 years later. So you went from winning Grom comps to winning Challenger Series in 3 years. How the hell did you keep up with yourself in that time? I remember watching you just being like, what? Because you were just going, woo. And I was going, yeah, mum, can you put me in the state titles again?
You were killing it and are killing it in your own right, JJ. I remember, it's funny, and it only makes me realize how quick and how like steep the trajectory was to the top in by talking to like my closest friends, yourself and even Kobe kind of says that to me. Like, it's so wild. Like, you just blink and it kind of all happened. And for me, I do have a feeling that life went so fast that I was like, there's times where I was struggling to keep up with it, but it was so good and so beautiful. And I felt so lucky and that I was just going for it. Like, I just, you know, take it while you got it. Go hard. And I guess what I'm trying to say is when you're in it, you don't really think about it. You're just seeing your next step that's in front of you and you just go like taking that. And that was just happening really fast. So for me, I didn't feel like, whoa, like that happened so quick because I just didn't have that perspective. And I really appreciate my good friends that can do like tell me about that because it's so true. Like it was so clear to me the days when we're going to foster with the whole, all the girl gang in the car. Yes. Who's going to have the front? The person would be like, I get car sick. So they got the front seat. And then I thought, well, maybe I can get car sick. Like all that sort of stuff on the, when we were doing that, like all of that sort of stuff, boards on the roof, food in the back, like having your friends yeah. everywhere and like, no parents were around because we were all in the same boat. We all had to try and do it as cheap and as like do our best. And we were all alike. We wanted to do our best. Like, and those days, literally to me, when I think about it, was yesterday. But
I know.
And it really kind of was 3-4 years, like however long it was. But yeah, I mean, back to your point, it definitely happened fast. And I'm so grateful. And I don't know. I didn't see it coming. It just was happening. And I'm really, really grateful for the team I had around me.
Yeah.
Like obviously Glenn was so huge in that part. I jumped under his wing once like it started to get pretty serious and he, I think, protected me from a lot.
Yeah, for sure. And I feel like Glenn, obviously he's played a massive part in your career and you guys almost have like a family kind of unit. But do you remember like ever having a conversation with your team, like even if it was someone like Glenn where you were like, okay, I'm not mucking around anymore, like this is what I'm doing, you know, this is, and like kind of had a turning point where you're like, I'm taking this 110% seriously until I'm at the top. Like was there a certain moment?
Yeah, there is, and I'm really happy that I remember this moment. And it's quite relevant for the podcast, for this situation, because I had entered a couple competitions and I had started to win the odd one here and there as a junior. And I actually remember getting invited to the Lane Beachley Rising, like the Surfing Australia Lane Beachley camp. Mm-hmm. And I think, is that under 14s or under 16s?
Yeah, that was under 16s. Yeah.
And I think I was 14 or 15 at the time. And I remember going there like, oh my God, like it was the coolest thing. Like to me, I still didn't know what professional surfing was, but I just was like, this is, I don't know. And then I went there, no expectations, which is so beautiful when you're young. It's like you don't have pressure. It's just like you're free.
The best.
Yeah, and I guess went there, just had the best time. I remember it was so like it just fed who I was. It really spoke to me because like I was so curious and it was endless possibility of learnings. And I just thought, oh, this is so good. I feel like I'm going somewhere. And then at the end of the camp, I didn't realize, but they award someone a Rising Star Award. Lane does herself and she's there and they were sitting down and I get called up and I won this award of the Rising Star. And I was like, whoa. And then from that moment, I'd won a couple comps and then that. And I think that was the real defining moment of like, okay, like I'll put a lot of time, energy and effort. And then I got consumed by it and I was obsessed with going for it.
Absolutely. And I mean, like when you have someone like Lane hand you an award like that, like it is kind of a moment where you go, oh, okay, like I can actually do this. I like, you know, if she sees my talent, like sometimes all it takes is like a big role model, a big name. Like Lane Beachley is one of the greatest women in our sport of all time. Like for her to see the potential in you, I mean, she was right because obviously look at you now.
Yeah,
but
for sure.
I just think like every, like just the little pep in your step, you know, and like you said, like it was a really fast kind of trajectory from when we went from Grom comps at Port Macquarie to you're on tour. Like that was such a quick amount of time. And I feel like where I'm getting with this is the moment that I remember seeing you and watching you and be like, she's actually doing it, is it was your first year on the Challenger Series. It was a really hard year for anyone competing on the Challenger Series. It was 2021. Mm-hmm. COVID was happening. There was 4 events through France, Portugal, Hawaii and Huntington, I believe. And you guys couldn't actually come home because of COVID. And I remember watching you away be like, how daunting that would be. Like you can't come home first time on a league like this. Like I just think I remember watching you and being like, how the hell is she doing this? And I feel like that was a real turning point in your career. And correct me if I'm wrong. Where, you know, I remember seeing you be like, she's actually doing this.
Mm, for sure. Yeah. I think, firstly, I guess I want to back the story of this because COVID we were on the QS. I'd done the juniors and then hit the QS and was like, I knew I wanted to do it. And I had seen the path that I wanted to follow to get to tour. I understood it. I knew what professional surfing was by then. And I wanted, I saw the path very clearly and I realized what I had to do. And that was to win events on the QS and go. And then COVID, we're in China at the QS, my first international QS.
Hainan.
Yes, exactly. At the event. And I remember we came back and then COVID broke out months later. I'm not sure exactly the timeline, but then the world stopped in a sense. Surfing, only the tour was going. The rest of the field was like at a stagnant. And as difficult and as hard COVID was, there was, I think, a few positives that came out of that. And one was I got a lot of time at home and I got to hone in my skills and really gain clarity on how I wanted to go about things with Glenn because he was at home as well. So it was a really valuable time for me to build on my surfing and just find myself as a surfer away from competition. And I guess I honestly have followed through with that. And then I just feel like I had not lucked out because I worked hard, but I had lucked out a little bit that my ranking from the couple of events that ran before got me straight into the challenges. So I didn't have to start from really the start. So then when it came back, I was in the challenges and it was go time. So then going forwards to what you're saying, the challenges, it was literally you had your people that had qualified and scouted the group. Who do I want to travel with? I was so lucky. That was the same year Kobe was going on the challenges as well. So Rip Curl had a really strong team at that time and, like, they were also my friends. So we were all on tour together and we created a family away from home and it was really fun. I was really lucky to have Kobe there because, like, she's more than just a friend, you know. She's a close friend. She feels like family for me. It's a slice of home away from home. And I just remember we just, like, let's go do this. Let's go travel the world. I've never really done that. And let's go and get after it. And it was a rigorous year. Like, it had a lot of turning points in that year.
This episode of the She's Electric podcast is proudly brought to you by Hyundai, Australia's trusted and leading car brand. Whether you're heading to your favorite surf spot or exploring new breaks, Hyundai has the perfect vehicle for every adventure. With the stylish Tucson, the tough Santa Fe Hybrid, and the all-electric Kona, Hyundai ensures you've got the wheels and the accessories to get you from wherever you are to the beach with ease. As major partners of Surfing Oz since 2018, Hyundai are supporting the sport at all levels, championing equality and driving real change. Check out the full range of vehicles at hyundai.com.au or head to your nearest dealer today. That year, it was such a random year for the Challenger Series. It was obviously the first year that they tried it. You ended up coming eighth, and due to double qualifications that year, it actually meant you finished one spot out of qualifying. And I'm being like, oh my gosh, like she was so close. And then Katie, she said, no, I'm sorry, I don't want my spot on tour. And you got the call up. Who makes that phone call? Like, who calls you to tell you you're on tour? Like, who did that?
Yeah, it's such a funny story because I guess to set the scene, so we go to Hawaii, Haleiwa. It's the proving ground of surfing, and that's the last deciding event for the Challenger Series to earn your spot on tour. And I had come into that event knowing I had work to do, but I also it was really achievable. And I was really excited, and I don't know, my surfing felt good, la-di-da. And there was this –
la-di-da.
La-di-da. And then there was all this, I guess Glenn in his own head, he was managing – when it gets to the stage or the heat, because there's four people in the heats at the time, and if you get third or fourth, it changes the point system. And if you get third, that could mean I qualify, and fourth meant I missed out. And Glenn was like, at the end of the day, we went in going, our goal is to win the event, and you don't get through and win the event by getting third and fourth in heats. So I guess he was torn in his head. Do I tell her if that time comes to tell her and say, hey, if you get third here, you'll qualify it? You know, and so we go into the event. I didn't know about this, but this was something that was happening in his head. We get on, and the heat comes, and I didn't know about it. I wasn't told about it, and I go into the surf. I surf, and I get fourth. I come in, and I didn't. I knew that I hadn't qualified. I knew if I made that heat, I hadn't qualified, but I did not realize if I got third, I would have qualified.
Oh, Molly.
So I came in, and you know what's really funny? Lakey knocked me out. Lakey Peterson.
Oh, she's like your best friend on tour now.
She's
right?
like one of my closest friends on tour, if not the closest. And
she's the one that knocked you out.
Yeah, and she came up to me and like she's got the sweetest heart. So I think she felt really bad. But she came up and she's like, in my head, I didn't really know how dramatic. I didn't know if there was still a chance. So I wasn't like straight devastation. I was just like, oh, it's such a bummer. Like, I know I'm not guaranteed, but maybe there's a chance. I'm not sure. But then yeah. Lakey came up. She's like, I'm so sorry. And it kind of sunk in. And then she was like, but you like, don't worry. Like, you've got it all. You'll be there. Don't stress. And then I was kind of like, oh, thanks. Like, cool. I'll see you soon. Or like, yeah, same as what you said. Like, it puts the pep in your set. Like, thank you.
Yeah.
And then there was word before the comp or around that Hawaii time that Katie had already qualified or could qualify. And if she did, we didn't know what she was going to do. And I guess I knew that. So it was a safety net in the back of my brain. But I'm really grateful the way Glenn told me to go about it, because he said, look, you didn't make the cut, and go and like go and process that as if you didn't make it, because there was a time frame of about a month where there was a lot of back and forth to let Katie make her decision in and let her have the respect. But I guess my side, we wanted to know, one, to celebrate and to cut the sadness. But that's why we kind of decided, you know what, let's forget about it. It was over kind of that Christmas summer break. And it was like devoed, so devoed that I had been cut and went home as if I hadn't. And I guess I was just hanging out with friends. Like, fast forward, there was a lot of back and forth chat between my team, Katie's team, and WSL. And yep. It was off season then, and I was cruising around with my friend, and I remember it had started to lean towards that she wasn't going to do it. That was what I'd heard. And then that end of that week, it was, she's actually going to take the spot. And that was, there was a lot of back and forth going, but the one bit where we thought we were done, it kind of went one last back and forth. And I was like, and then I got the call 2 days later. I remember it so clearly. I was with my friends. And I think Jesse Mullidyer, the tour and comms for WSL, called me and said, Katie's not going to take a spot. And then Glenn and whatnot, like I was in contact quite quickly. But I did get one initial call and it was like, Katie's not going to take a spot, therefore you get the spot. You're on tour next year. And I was eating lunch with my friend Zoe, which you know, who chaired me up the day of my first competition. Oh my gosh, now joining the dots, that is so wild. And I was at lunch and then I was just like, I qualified for tour, and then we were eating fish and chips or something so like basic and Aussie. And then it was kind of like, let's go sell, like, we got to go do something. And I was just sitting there like, wow, like that's how it happens. It just, you don't know how it's going to happen. And if it's meant to happen, it'll happen. And I was just like, whoa, like that's crazy. And it is the most, it's honestly, you dream of making the tour and it's all this big hoo-ha. No matter how much you think you're going to get there, you're not guaranteed it. And I just remember thinking like, wow, I did it, you know. And
I remember when the post came out, the Instagram post that said Katie's not taking a spot, therefore Molly Picklin qualifies. I was like, dad, Molly's qualified, like running around the house. I was like, oh, my God. Like I just remember being like, she's done it. Like you were the first person in our group of girls who grew up competing. We all did the Grom comps together. You were the first one to get over the line. And I just remember being like, she's a legit professional surfer.
Yeah. Like, it's kind of that verification, hey, you're like, oh my gosh. Like, wow, like I'm kind of there. And I actually have the weirdest story, which is a bit off topic, but I was driving home that day with Zoe, like, woo, this and that. And someone, we nearly got in the most psycho car crash because someone had slept drive. And then I remember thinking, like, it was just twists and turns in my life. And it was so just like the best thing nearly happened, like the best thing happened to me. And then I literally like nearly, this person like fell asleep while driving, was heading straight towards it. And I was just like, oh, I just need to go home. So then honestly, the rest of that day, I just sat like in my house, just like, I don't know what to think. Like, oh.
From hero to zero, like so quickly, just like, yeah, no.
Yeah. Well.
Okay, let's take it back a second. But That first year you had on tour, I mean, I am obviously a huge fan of yours. You know this, I know this. We remember watching you on tour. It was your rookie year, and it probably didn't go the way that you were hoping it to go, I'm going to say. Like, mm-hmm. I think we all thought you were going to come out of the gates gun blazing, but the tour has a really cool way of, I feel like, humbling new blood into the tour. Like, you think you're going to come out guns blazing, but then I feel like the CT goes, settle down, do your time. Talk to me about, you know, your first year on tour and the cut, yeah, and what Margs was like for you.
You know it exactly right. And I guess coming out on tour, I felt confident in what I could do. I knew that my surfing needed to grow and that I wasn't like the surfer I wanted to be as of yet, but I did feel like I could stay on tour and it was time to give it a go. And in say, I'd still do feel like that in a sense, but, yeah. And I remember coming out just, okay, like Pipe, I knew the thing that gave me confidence was Pipe was the first event, like the first, I guess, like the actual time it was officially on the cards. And so everyone was a rookie at the first event in a sense. So I kind of was like, this is going in my favor because everyone here is actually like scared and it's all new to them and they're dealing like that. Everyone feels like exactly like me right now. So yep. Then I was like, sweet, we're all on level playing field, no vets and whatever, let's go. And I guess like surfing, it humbles you, waves don't come, it doesn't pan out, you make a wrong decision, it's quite cutthroat. And I remember surfing and yeah, like you know me well, the results weren't what I felt like I was capable of and I didn't feel like I put my best foot forward. And unfortunately, because of the cut being so early on in the year, it was like I just never got the ball rolling. I felt like I had just opened my eyes and realized, wow, this is where I want to be and I am here and this is so cool. You're rubbing shoulders with these people and you're at the top and there's cameras and you get to watch full heat replays yourself. Like it's a real big, like just getting used to it. And then it was done. And it was like, ah.
Yeah. Did you enjoy your first year on tour? Like, was that enjoyable for you or was it kind of just like, oh my God, like what's going on?
Yeah, it was enjoyable, but it was also like very fast paced moving and it felt like a bit like a lot, but I enjoyed it. I actually don't remember, I don't remember feeling bad because yeah, I have really positive thoughts on my first year on tour until the cut, for sure. The cut was brutal.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember seeing you just after Marks and Snapper was like a week later. You had to bounce straight back and go to the Challenger Series and we were walking to day one of Snapper. Like we were going for an early morning surf. It was day one of Snapper. I have never seen you like that before in my life. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, you're my Molly. Like when I need a little pep in my step, you're the girl I go to. Like we always bounce off each other's energy. And I remember walking there and just being like, oh my God. Like I just remember thinking like, she's broken. Like what's wrong with her?
Yeah.
Like I remember being like,
for sure.
And I just thought to myself, I remember going home and saying to Dad, I was like, I'm really worried about Moll. Like she just seems really deflated and she's got a whole nother tour to surf this year. But how did you bounce back? Like where did that like mental resilience come from? Because that's something I idolize of you really like a lot, because that year you had such a strong year on the Challenger Series. You did re-qualify the following year, but I remember watching you and thinking, I have never seen Molly so defeated, to then you had an absolute crazy year on tour. Like where did that come from? Mm. Like your soul came out of nowhere. I was where did she go? But she's back.
Yeah. For sure. And I think that's a key point because I still struggle with that today where naturally who I am is so optimistic, positive, happy, just want to have a good time, a good laugh and just the real good like core meanings of life. Like I enjoy just sitting in that and that is who I am naturally. And I think great things and like sport, they just challenge you and push you to the dead kind of like to the end, and they push you to the most extreme levels of happiness and like sadness and all of that. And I guess that moment you saw me in was the first time I had felt like life was starting to take its toll. And that was like, it was just another learning for me. Like it was just realizing that life is hard. Like there is times and there is moments where you're going to be tired. You put in everything and then you don't get rewarded. And I guess that's what's so special about sport. It teaches you life lessons. And that was huge for me because I was, like you said, I was dead. I had nothing left. I had given it my all and I was like super sad and just like, oh, like, you know, it's a real knock to your confidence because like, I feel like I'm meant to be here, but then your path, like you see your path on tour and then it just goes, doop. And then you've got to like quickly regather and go, okay, like, what does this right hand or left hand turn now look like? And I remember, I remember that moment, at Snapper and I just, looking back on it, I think the reason I got away with it is because I allowed myself to be like that. Like you're allowed to be like sad or tired and exhausted. And I, in that time, I knew I'd given it my all and it didn't pan out. I knew I what I could control, I could do. And I did understand that as much as it hurt. But and I think that's why I could kind of rebuild. But in saying that, I did have a killer start. But I really like... I had a killer start at Snapper. I got second. So then all of a sudden, oh, like kind of that's like what I was sad about. It's over. Like I'm going to qualify again. This is all happy and good. So don't worry about me. Here I go. And then the next event in Manly, I did really bad. And it was like the fear of like, oh my God, it might not happen. And that was the emotional roller coaster that really ticked off. Then I just like went down because I think winning Snapper made me realize like, oh, it's fine. It's okay. And then Manly was like, oh my God, like I'm going to have to dig deep again. Mm. And like, it's not guaranteed again. And all of that confidence and all those stories come in. And it was really hard for me. I did really struggle. And there's so many things of me talking about the story where I just like couldn't even finish a wave because I was so mentally just blocked in so many different ways. And you know, it's like everything, like what you inspire me, how you are, like you just get up and get after it. Like you look at your next step and you go for it. And I think that is kind of what I did. That was my process to getting back of just doing what I can in that time, what is good for me now and just do that. And then, I mean, I ended up being able to turn that year around in Bolito one and continued on and re-qualified.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrificed to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt the support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.
I feel like you were just saying, I feel like competitive, just being an athlete in general is a roller coaster. Like, and I think the best athletes in the world, they are so successful because of the way they navigate the roller coaster. And they, I think, you know, you look at people like, for me, Ash Barty, like she's had such a beautiful navigation of what the roller coaster of sport was. But you were off tour, you hit that low, but then you've re-qualified for tour in 2022 and you haven't fallen off again. You've actually consistently gotten fifth in the world and you've won CT events, which is mind-blowing to me. Anytime I see you do anything amazing, I'm always like, oh my gosh. Like I always think back to Port Macquarie. I'm like, that's her. Like that's her doing that. Talk to me about your relationship with Sunset because you are now the second woman ever in the history of surfing twin back-to-back there. The only other person to do that is Lane Beachley. So to have a stat like that, next to your name, which is also next to Lane Beachley's, that is huge, Molly. Like, there's something in the water between you and Sunset. There's got to be.
For sure. I mean, thank you. And it's so funny. Can I just say, too, the fact Lane Beachley was, like, the string, like, the stars just, I think we're doing what we're meant to be doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because, like, it's crazy to me that Lane's the only other person that's done that. And she was the first person that ignited, like, the Rising Star Award. Like, it's just so, like, wow. Anyways, back to Sunset. I think for me, I really do go head first and just grab a challenge by, like, the horns, you know? Like, the bull of Sunset, I just grab the horns and go for it. And with Sunset, it's a really challenging event because it's in Hawaii, which is, like I said, it's just the most rawest, hardest place for a surfer because it's so like physically taxing, mentally taxing. It's a real proving ground and it really does challenge a surfer. Mm. Although the other side of that is that it develops your surfing and it makes you grow as a surfer, which I love. And the other point on Sunset, you literally come from pipe. So you go from riding barrels for the first event, and then 3 days later, you're taking on literally the most craziest cargo ride, just like, woohoo! Like, it's just the most wild and unpredictable wave ocean out there. It's crazy. And I think I like it because it strips all pressure back in a sense, because the ocean is so wild. It's really unpredictable there that I kind of accept it for the first time. Like I think I like to control things. I like to know if I'm going to be good or bad. But out there, it's kind of like just go for it and see what happens, because it's kind of that wave. You got to do that to get scores, and it's just a really hard wave. Anyways, I don't know. I just like the challenge of it. It's so weird and it's not like that fun, but it makes you feel alive. And it's just like, oh, this is so raw and crazy and wild. And you're on big boards and the takeoff's like, woo! Like, I don't get that around here. Like, you normally just surf high performance waves, and there's something, it's just so different. So you can't appreciate a different event. And, you can't not appreciate the difference of that. And, I don't know. I've had really special moments out there, and I don't know really.
Maybe like you and Sunset are like seemingly alike. Like there's a lot going
on.
As
a personality, it's like, it's always a bit unpredictable, like spicy.
But we love it. Yeah.
Literally, to explain the whole like spice here and there, the turn that I did this year at Sunset, which obviously was a huge career highlight of mine.
It was groundbreaking. Don't cut that short. It was groundbreaking.
but that is Sunset in a nutshell. I went up thinking I was like, I knew what the end section has. I know it's big out there, but I was like, I'm going for this turn that I definitely thought I could make. And it was like a makeable turn, not this some cycloptic double up, big, huge, like, heaving Sunset end section. But it's because it does that. I went up and the wave was 4 foot, and then by the end it doubled in size and was like, had like done a backwash and a wobble, and it was huge. And then I was just in competition. That's why I love it. It makes you just fight to the end. And that turn, I was just holding on for dear life. Just like, I remember hitting it thinking, like, I've got to make it. I want to get through this heat. I just remember like feeling so competitive, and coming down, I felt my board flutter and I thought, oh, I'm dead. Like, I'm actually mince. And
I'm out.
but same thing. I was like, just try, just try. And I these thoughts were going through my head while I was doing like, oh, like just keep sending. And then, I came down and I just remember feeling like boom, and not the lip land on my head. I thought the lip was just going to be on my head through my boards. I was honestly snap and dead, or I had made it and got an amazing score. And I just remember feeling the white water like kind of tickle my back, and I was like, and then you saw the rest of it. Then I was just like claiming so hard. I remember my first claim was like, oh my God, I made it. And then it was like, yes, I got a good score. And then it was like, what the heck? I just made that, you know?
It was stupid, really. That turn was just like, what the hell was that? I just remember being like, it was a roller coaster to watch as well, because I was like, no. Okay, she's going for it. Hold on. I was just like, you came out and we were all screaming watching. I was like, oh my God, Molly. Like, that's the start of this year. Like, that was huge. Like, the start of this year for you, like, not just you, but female surfing in general, like, sure. You didn't only break history at Sunset with that turn, but that heat, that whole event at Pipe, but that heat you had with Betty Lou, I personally believe best female surfed heat I've ever watched in my life. And I've gone back and watched a lot of old comps, but people who are like seriously in deep in the surf industry are calling that the best heat they've watched, just that, like, men or women that they've watched between you and Betty Lou. Like, did you know that you were making history in that moment? Like, did it feel as amazing as it looked? Because watching on, like, I had tears in my eyes. I was like, who is this girl? Like,
for sure. I mean, I guess it has sunk in, because when I think about it, I just like kind of stare and gaze and just reminiscing that because it was just so like the stars aligning. It was so special, women being at Pipeline, the waves firing, them running us on the day that it's like perfect, it being finals day. The women that were left in it were the most capable women to take on those waves. Myself, Betty Lou, you know what I mean? Like Katie's been running the charge in that. And it was just, and I remember, I guess to run through the day, it didn't start off like that. It was real stormy and actually scary at the start. Like I remember seeing Connor O'Leary and Ethan Ewing out in the morning free surf on dark. And because it was so big and it was second reefing, but there was the forecast was saying that it was meant to settle down and then get really good, which we did see. But in the morning, it was still like this from the other day when it was like huge and second reefing and stormy and lurchy. And I remember being out there and they were like, oh my God, this is gnarly. And I just remember like paddling around on my 6.6 and like, you know, when you're on a 6.6 out pipe, you're going to get a huge barrel. Like,
I don't know. I actually don't know that feeling.
No, but like just like having a really big surfboard.
If you feel like
you need it, then it's any wipeout is going to hurt. And yeah. I just remember thinking, please don't cop wave on the head. Like, oh, like I was so scared in the morning and I came in. That thing, I was all fired up though, because I was just like, if they like today's the day, it's scary, it's gnarly. So, you know, I'm gonna push it and try, and hopefully it crumbles some of the girls, so then I can try and win. I don't know, but and then I came in and it was still kind of still like sun coming over the mountains. The call they made, it was settling down, it was on. I ran back to the Rip Curl house at Off the Wall. I changed my equipment because Glenn had been watching and it started to drop. And I remember coming back going like, this is sick. Like the waves are pumping. I got my boards. Glenn's there. He's been watching. Like I'm ready. And I remember sitting down and like nervous, like for sure. Cause at the end of the day, there's no one else out there. So you can't hide in the crowd. Pipeline has the most gnarly, like insane crowd that you could ever sit amongst to try and just catch a wave and look at a wave. So normally when it's big and scary, you can kind of be like, oh, I didn't catch a wave because there was a crowd, you know? But this time it's like there's no one out there. Like every sick wave that comes in,
no hiding.
Anyway, so I was like, whoa, that's like nerve-wracking, but you could get the barrel of your life. And I was just like, whoa, this is crazy. anyways, then the day unfolded. We watched some heats. There was amazing barrels being ridden. And yeah, I mean, now going into Betty Lou and I's heat, coming into that, to me, that was the final. Like I was like, this girl, she's born and raised here. She's like, she is the same level of fireworks, spark, and just lean into a challenge like that. She was she's my biggest rival, I guess, for that certain event and that situation. So we start and I remember we paddled out and there were some crazy waves and we looked at each other and she has good perspective too. Like she was like, hey, this is pretty cool, you know? And we all knew like how special it was. And I guess before the heat had even started, we were like, wow, this is crazy. Like so stoked to be sharing this with you. Like a lot of respect for each other, but wanted to kill each other. Like didn't want her to get away. and then paddled over. Katie had just made the final and then Betty Lou and I are on and these waves just started coming and I don't know, it was crazy. Like she got a pretty good wave. She had like a decent score. In my head, I knew I wasn't safe unless I had like 220, like two tens, a total of 20.
Yeah. Because
Pipeline's one of those waves that you can get ones or twos because you didn't make it out of the barrel or you make it out and it's a 10. And it really does feel like that. So you just like, I just remember being so nervous, like, I knew it was going to be a crazy challenge. And I had a couple runs on the board, nothing substantial. And then, she had that one wave and I remember this lump come in and I did recognize it earlier because it didn't stand up on the reef how like it kind of went underneath, but I saw it had enough substance and I liked the line on it. And I remember not moving because I was like, I don't want her to go because she had priority at the time. So she could have just gone. And I was sitting there like looking at her and I was a little bit further in and because it didn't stand up on the reef how they normally do it, she was kind of like, it probably isn't that great of a wave, which makes complete sense. And then I was under priority kind of like, well, I may as well try. She had better scores. It's free. It's pretty quick to get back out. And I just remember going and because I didn't move too early because I didn't want her to like have a good look at it. I ended up being a little late into it, and that's, you see on this wave that I paddle like as hard as I could just to try and make the drop, and I do the full scoop out because I'm a little late and kind of pull up straight, just make the drop. And I remember pulling into it, and I do that at pipe. Like my technique's not fabulous, but at the end of the day, I have enough to get in there. And I remember pulling into it, and then I saw that it had a line to it that it was going to run, because sometimes pipe, You pull up, you do all this crazy work, you get the wave, you take the drop, and then it doesn't even run off and barrel. And you're like, I just did everything and I didn't even get a barrel.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah. But this one I saw like, oh, I'm in it. And I saw like, and I'm still going. So this is great. Like I'm in, like I'm going and it's still going and I can see. Then I remember seeing, I saw the exit and then everything went white, like because I, like the spit kind of had passed me. And yeah. I just remember thinking like, no, like normally, I mean, you want the spit because it gets you more points, but also it's hard to navigate because you can't see. And then I just remember sitting there like, oh, and then I couldn't see. And I just felt like the, and I was just like, ah! Literally. No, and then I just remember claiming it like I just came out like this, like, is that it? Like that's the best wave ever. That's sick.
For someone like who's watched you grow up, like, and I think anyone back home who's like had anything to do with you, like even at the ABBs or just at like, you know, Grom camps, like at Lane Beach, there's like so many people who have things to do with you watching you go out there and then do that and then get a 10. Like we were just like, where did this come from? Because like, it wasn't like we saw all these crazy clips of you at pipe before. Like obviously you had one at pipe, you know, you're the Vans pipe master, which is a huge accolade. Like that is insane. But it was like, that kind of came from nowhere. Like I don't ever remember seeing a clip of you kind of getting flogged at pipe or making a crazy barrel. Like I was like, oh, when did she get good at surfing that wave? Like I've never been like, when did that happen? Like for someone who has never surfed pipe, and for the little girls who probably have reps under their belt and are starting to surf pipe, is there a figure out there? How many sets on the head, how many wipeouts, how many over the falls at pipe until you're good at surfing that wave?
I would, I know that like, that I am good out there and I have had results out there. And I honestly, for me, I still don't feel good out there because that's the part about pipe. It's just that she's always going to like make you humble. And I had a really, significant session, like a real prominent in my brain. It was like, okay, this surf, I had the crowd was right. It was good pipe and it was pretty lurchy. So it was a little tricky and a little scary, but the crowd was good. So, I got a few waves and I remember that I got so flogged. Like, like I literally, cause I was like, this is my time to try and get my pipe barrel and this is it. You know, you got to take it when it's in front of you. And, I have one crazy wipeout story that is like I got pushed to the bottom, went over the falls, pushed to the bottom, and I remember feeling the – I actually was lucky I got a flat part of the reef, like the rock reef, and I was on the bottom on the rock, and then I remember sliding along it, and then I dropped again. Like there was like another level that I dropped, and I was like, wait, what? I thought I was on the floor. And then I remember feeling next to me, and I was in one of the little caves, like because there's like little – holes in
in the reef. Tommy Carroll's been stuck in one of them too.
No way. And then I remember feeling around me and then I was like, oh my God. I was like, whoa, this is crazy. Like this is not normal. Anyways, then I went up and I remember feeling so happy that like there was nothing above me and I just like pushed out and then came up. But that is a really in-depth story. That was wild. Pipe's only ever done terrifying. That to me. Super, but it kind of made me like, okay, that's all it's going to teach me. Like I'm okay. And
yeah,
but in saying to answer your question, I've been flogged out there. Like I have felt like this big just in a washing machine. I feel like, yeah, like turn that washing machine to turbo. And that is what I've been through out there. Like, I mean, to put a figure on it, I've probably only caught 50 waves at pipe and I've wiped out on 25 of them in my free serves. Like you sit out there for hours and you don't catch waves because of the
crowd. No way.
Surfing for me is all about having fun and finding ways to keep it fresh and exciting. These boards do exactly that. So if you want the chance to win one of these boards and be a part of a women's surfing revolution, this is for you. We're going to be giving away the Hyundai Bright Spark Award each week to the most enthusiastic and committed female surfer we find. No matter how long or short your rides are, submit your Bright Spark video and show us how you enjoy the process, celebrate the wins, and most of all, have fun. Now more than ever, surfing is for the girls.
I'm honestly in awe of you. Like, I remember the start of this year, I was like, that's crazy. Like, Pipe was crazy. Then you went on to Sunset, had an insane run in at Sunset, and then you had a pretty solid year. You got a lot of quarters. Felt like maybe you might have got stuck in quarters in a couple of them, and then, you know, you finally came out. You made the top five. You got fifth this year, fifth in the world for the second consecutive year, actually the highest ranked Australian female, Molly, which is absolutely absurd. But not only have you had all of that this year, you also had to juggle not just the tour and trying to stay on tour, trying to make the top five, but you had the Olympics on your plate. What a great opportunity. Like, no one's ever going to take that away from you. You're an Olympian. Like, that is such an insane thing. Like, such a minute amount of people around the world can say that they're an Olympian. Talk me through that experience. Like, I feel like we didn't get to see a lot of you at the Olympics, but I just feel like the actual format of it, the lead up of it, like the name, like the Olympics, like how was that for all of you?
Mm. Yeah, I think, I guess with the whole run into then the final five, and I was then in the yellow jersey for the first time and feeling like, whoa, this world title thing's real. All of those on tour, those experiences prepared me for the Olympics, I think, and they played a crucial role in leaning in those experiences. Obviously, I haven't done too great when I get in yellow. It's like a really big pressure cooker, and it just is a lot more to navigate physically and obviously mentally. But so then the Olympics, I just wanted to, like, it's so new. It was going to be it was in Tahiti. It was pretty random, kind of. So I just remember thinking, like, look, I'm not, like, my expectations were kind of gone with it, and I just thought, just enjoy it. Like, be that little girl that is just, wow, like, I'm in the Olympics. I get, like, the Olympic jacket and dance around in my skirt and just enjoying, like, every single step that the Olympics had. And I, obviously, it was really disappointing. I think going into the Olympics, I really resonated with that wave. It's, like, same, but obviously two very different Tahiti tropes. It's left-hand throaty barrel that's really scary, but and there was, like, I felt pressure from myself more than anyone, but obviously everyone, like, we had every chance that I could have won gold there, and I do believe I could have, but that pressure going into the Olympics, it was, like, devastating after to honestly not even make really a good run in the comp. Like, I didn't get to even surf many heats at all, so that's why you didn't see much of me, but I think I don't let that result ruin the experience of the Olympics and just how different and beautiful, like, the Olympics is. It's incredible. The community spirit and you literally go from feeling like, I always feel so lucky. I have such good friends and a community that are always behind me. And I feel that every step of the way through my career on WSL and professional surfing, la-di-da. And, but then you get to the Olympics and you feel the nation behind you. Like, and I'm just little Molly from, like, here, but it's different. People, like, it's very different. And I don't know if I felt like that because people probably felt that I really could do it for Australia. But I mean, it was incredible. It was really cool. And the Olympics is something I aspire for. It gave me real clarity on how, like, the weight I put on a world title to an Olympic gold. And for me, I think the Olympics is something to aspire to and really go after as well.
Well, let's talk about that. What do you weigh more? Like, what means more to you, an Olympic gold or a world title?
Yeah, I think it's funny because as surfers, we have the world championship and the world title is like, that's the weight. And now it's like, I'm not satisfied unless I get the world title and the gold medal now, because like
both.
They're the same. Yeah. Because at the end of the day, we are surfers. It's a lifestyle. It's an industry. It's more, it's not just like a disciplined event. Mm. It's a full community core. And I think the core of surfing, our hearts want the verification from that side of surfing. It just feels right to be a world champion and to be recognized, because it's just so, like, there's such deep roots in surfing and world champions in the history, you know.
But oh, yeah, absolutely.
The Olympics is like, you go, like, it's insane. The level, like, to call yourself an Olympic, like a gold Olympic champion, it's like an Olympic gold medalist. You just, it's, shit, man, I want it.
I know. I get it.
But I guess it's like the whole world can relate to you as a world title. Only surfers can respect that, in a sense.
Yeah.
The whole world can respect an Olympic gold medalist, or an Olympic silver medalist, or bronze medalist, or an Olympian in general. The Olympics is just crazy.
So your eyes are definitely set on the next Olympics.
Most definitely, yes.
Most definitely. And one last question I want to ask you, based on your competitive career, and then we're going to roll in just to a couple more questions.
Yeah.
When you have the yellow jersey, you touched on this before and I wanted to let you run on, but I just need to know, when you have it and then you lose it, do you miss it? Is it something you crave, you want back, you know, you want to be in yellow? Is it kind of like a, not an ego kind of thing, but when you wear yellow, like, you must feel a different kind of way.
Yeah, it's for sure. I think there's no denying. I mean, you get the attention that comes to it. You feel like finally, not finally, but in that sense, you're like, I'm being recognized for the hard work that everyone does, but you feel like I'm getting recognized for the hard work that I do. And the results are, it's just nice when the results are reflecting the effort and hard work that you put in. It's always a really good feeling as a human, literally as an athlete, anyone in life. And the yellow jersey, I like, just signifies that example. So of course you crave that, and of course you want that. In saying that, I really believe there is a whole different game. It's getting to the top is one thing. Being at the top, it's like a whole nother thing. And I do give myself a lot of compassion around that, because the only way to practice that is when you're at the top, unfortunately. You can't prepare yourself for it until you're there. So it is something I want, and it's something I look forward to keep learning and growing and improving, is staying at the top. Well,
I have no doubt in my mind you're going to get it back. Like, that is, there is no doubt in my mind we're going to see you in yellow. We're going to see you in yellow so many times throughout your career. You've obviously, you're so young. Like, we're still babies. Let's be real. Like, we're still those little groms.
Yeah.
Like, we're still those little girls. And, you know, I'm 22, you're 22 next month, so not far. And you've achieved so much in so little time, and She's Electric and Hyundai have obviously allowed us to come on here and chat, yap away. But for us to have this talk, like, there's probably a lot of little girls out there who are thinking, like, oh, how can I be the next Molly? You know, like, what are you saying? Like, if you could go back and chat to that group of girls in that Lane Beachley camp now, what are you saying to them?
It's so funny. I have two things, and I really do, like, take this not with a lot of pressure, but I care for these questions, because I still feel like it was yesterday that I am that little girl. Like, I feel like
same
that little girl same. That I'm talking to. So I guess my first one is, when you see me, I seem so far in the distance and so far away from you guys, but at the end of the day, you guys being like the young groms or people that want to be me. But I felt like that for Steph and Carissa and your Lanes and Tyler's, like, it was something on TV until it's not. And I think understanding that it's actually a lot more achievable and a lot closer than what you could maybe ever imagine. It also may be a lot more rigorous and violent and crazy than what you could ever imagine, but I think for me, it really, the way my career has panned out, and what I can say is, it can go from watching it on TV to then being the person with the trophy on TV a lot quicker than what you can fathom. So I think just knowing that, And then also my second thing is being the next Molly Picklum isn't good enough. So I think being like yourself and evolving yourself to be even better is where you got to go.
I love that, Mol. I absolutely love that. And, you know, you obviously, you inspire me. You inspire so many people. Like, you are insane, and I don't think you understand, like, how crazy talented and just such a beautiful human that you are.
Thanks,
but
JJ.
For someone, like, who is so up here, you know, you are in the prime of your career, like, who inspires you? Like, who keeps you going, you know? Because I feel like in the realm I'm trying to get in, like, I still have these people that I still idolize. Like, you're there. Like, who keeps you going?
Yeah, it's funny. I don't have one person that I don't look at. It's a trait, I think, in people. And the trait is, like, the people that are behind the scenes and don't get recognized daily but still choose to do their best and be a good person and really put their best foot and just, like, take care of themselves and, like, maximize their situation. Like, I've seen single mums with a bunch of kids, and that has inspired me and really spoken to me of, like, they have no help or, like, this and that, and they still, like, do so good for the kids, and they, like, it's hard, you know, and they still get up and act, and they're positive, and they're still able to do that, and that's, like, really inspiring for me. And like yourself, you know, you've watched me, you've been alongside me, we know your, like, struggles through your own career. And I've watched you turn that in, pivot and grow and keep moving on when you haven't been recognized or had the accolades to really support what you want to do. And I think those things really inspire me of, like, man, I get the pat on the back. I get the support. I get the help to go and do what I do. Like, not to talk down what I am doing, but I really, like, there's people out there with no one to talk to, no help, this and that. And they're, like, charging it and trying just as hard as me. And I think that is what inspires me the most. And that's literally why you inspire me. Like, I've watched you, like, be in the shadows. Like, you know what I mean? You've come out and created your own. And I mean, it's incredible. And I think that trait in people inspire me. And I think that people can work towards that. And you don't need to be an athlete, like a mom, like a journalist, you can find that in any, like, shape
anywhere,
or form, in any, like, way of life. Yeah. And I think that really speaks to me, that trait.
I just got to wipe away my tears really quickly because that was so nice.
So deep and heavy, but still it's
so,
like,
deep,
it's true.
And heavy, but it's where we need to be. But Molly, you're one of my best friends. I think you were the best first guest to have on this podcast. I'm absolutely bloody adored having you on here, having this yarn with you. Apparently we've gone way over time limit, but guys, guess what? More content for you.
Yes.
One last question.
Yeah.
I keep referring back to our little grommet days. Think Port Macquarie, that very first event you won. If someone put you in a room right now with her, what would you say to her before she embarks on this journey that you've just gone on?
Hold on. It's going to be better and worse than you can imagine. And you know what? Let go of all the expectations and everything, because you can't predict what's about to unfold. And I think that same message that I tell her, I'm telling myself right now. And I think that's valid to hold perspective on that, because it's true. You'll never know how good, like, it can always be better than what you think. And also you'll never see the obstacles that you may face. And I think that's the beauty of life. And that's that. And that's, like, we got to love that. And
Mol,
also another note,
I
JJ, I'm so proud that we're on here doing this. It's so cool. I've watched you, like, literally, it's so crazy. I'm so, so happy I got to talk to you today. And I'm genuinely proud. The email that I went through and saw the breakdown of the way you were going to go about today, I was just like, you're literally doing yellow jersey stuff in your own right. I was really...
Oh, Molly, thank you. But I honestly, I love
Seriously.
You. I've loved having you on here, and I hope everyone else loves the chat that we've had, because that just fueled my soul. I feel like I need to go, like, conquer something. I need to go achieve something, like, right now.
We need to hang out, JJ. We need to actually see each other. Thank you, though, honestly. Thanks for having me on there. I'm so honored to be the first, the part of the first episode of She's Electric. I think it's such a cool concept, I think, having women on podcasts and just seeing the stories. I feel like everyone has their own story, and there's always something to learn and grow from in everyone's own little walk of life.
Amazing. Well, thank you, Molly. And I think that's pretty much a wrap for us. Well, guys, we've gone well over time here, but like I said at the start, Molly and I can chat, and I think, you know, it was a quality chat too, and you never know who the next Molly Picklum is going to be. She started out, you know, entering in events. So, guys, enter into the Hyundai She's Electric competition, because your path could end up exactly like Molly's did. So, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. We'll see you in for the next episode. Don't forget to like and subscribe. And, yeah, come back to see who our next guest is. Thanks, guys.
Ever been hooked from the first wave? Or given a pathway to shine? Have you ever found your tribe amongst the noise? Or sacrifice to stand out amongst your peers? Ever felt support that gives you the strength to keep going? Or paddled into the unimaginable? Ever met a generation that knows no bounds? Now you can.